Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Chris Wasso, Serena Bellissimo and Dean McGuinness are all here for Movies and Booze. Good afternoon to you all.
Hello.
We'll start with you, Dean, because what in the name of God is that? Now, I know it's an urge to be patriotic and people kind of, I suppose, maybe look down their nose on Americans, dye things green, but
yeah.
We are going to drink a green beer.
Yes, we've got a green, white and gold theme here. So okay. we've got a green beer, a white beer and a gold beer, and there's only two beers there. So just to make
okay.
it confusing.
Running. Yeah. Yes. Mm. Yeah.
But yes, we are looking at green beer. Now, green beer has if you are talking to a home brewer and you tell him that he has a green beer, he will slap you around the back of the head. It's a term that's used for a young beer, and it'd be a beer that would have flavours of green apple, which is acetaldehyde, or butter, which is diacetyl, or sometimes kind of harsh yeasty flavours. That's not what we're doing today.
Okay, that's a bad thing.
That's a bad thing, yeah. But for all the home brewers out there that hear that we're doing green beer, it is not beer that has been very badly brewed. It's been very well brewed. It is physically green beer, and the best I could describe it would be kind of radioactive green.
That's more than enough, Dean. Thank you. I suppose we don't really have... one of the movies, at least, was shot in Dublin, even though it's pretending to be London.
It's pretending to be London, but it's One Last Deal with Danny Dyer, made by an Irish film director, shot over, like, just 10 days this time last year, and really gives... Danny Dyer has been doing a lot of press for this. And
he's been doing a lot of everything.
He never has
a day off.
I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
There's sort of this like mid-career revival for Danny Dyer and shining a light on his acting ability after so many years of just people being like, oh, Danny Dyer is just Danny Dyer. Now he's actually putting in decent performances. He has described this film as his Hamlet. Don't know about that.
Hamlet, innit?
Yeah. I say that as a Dyer fan. So we are looking at that. He plays a very...
Not a Hamlet fan.
He plays a very sweary, very sweaty football agent trying to strike one last deal for his controversial clients. So we have that. And we also have How to Make a Killing with Glenn Powell, which is sort of the latest installment in the How to Make Glenn Powell a Movie Star universe.
Is it a remake of Kind Hearts and Coronets?
Or kind of a spin
on it?
Yeah, it was originally fashioned as a very faithful remake, but it was going to be set in America. But it kind of went its own way, but it still has to come with a title inspired by that film, because it's still about a guy trying to off, you know, seven or eight relatives so that he can inherit his family's money.
Okay, good stuff. And actually, yes, a public service announcement from last week when people were texting in saying, it's Barry Keoghan. It's not. It's Barry Keoghan. Serena heard him on BBC Radio 1 during the week confirming it's Barry Keoghan. That's how you say his name. So in your face, texters, we're right and you're wrong. And we would say so repeatedly forever. Moving on from that. This is kind of good news for movie theatres.
Yeah. So... you probably would have noticed something goes to the cinema and it feels like 3 weeks later it's on a streaming service.
Yeah.
So Universal have come out, and that sort of happened after COVID. Mm. I think, you know, cinema viewership was down because it had to be, because, you know, we couldn't leave the house. And a way for the movie studios to recoup their money was by putting it straight onto streaming. And actually something that's been really cheeky of late is that it doesn't go straight to streaming anymore. Always. You'll notice that some of the big films or films that haven't made that much money actually are asking you to rent them. So not only are we paying for our streaming service, and I don't know why that gets me so upset, because I just feel like I pay for all these streaming services and then you're telling me you want me to pay, and I know it's only 5 or 6 euro, but it's the principle of the matter. So, but now Universal have come out and said as of this year and next year as well, they're going to lengthen their stays in cinemas. So at least 5 weeks, and then next year at least 7 weeks.
And would that imply that they're seeing kind of an uptick in people going to cinemas now?
I don't know if it's that, but it could also imply that they're hoping, because it's still 20% down pre-COVID.
Yeah.
But I think if... I know myself, and I love movies. I love the cinema. Like, the experience you get in the cinema isn't the experience you get at home. But there are some films where I just go, I know that in 2 weeks, you know, let's say a month's time, it's going to be on streaming.
Yeah.
So, you know, in if someone, and then you sort of feel like you're getting a little bit ripped off, where you can get it on a service that you've already paid for rather than have to pay for it again. So I think they're trying to back theatres. And look, AMC in America, it's a theatre cinema chain there. They're thrilled. They're thrilled that they are trying to reignite the love of cinema. And I think that's great. So Universal are the first to do it. Hopefully other movie studios come on board as well.
Yeah. Well, not well. Like the Peaky Blinders film. I think that was literally a fortnight.
Just getting 2 weeks. Yeah, I'd say Chris Nolan, who has a contract at Universal, I'd say he's exempt from that. So when you see when the Odyssey comes out in cinemas this summer, it will be in cinemas for a couple of months. You're not going to get that on the streaming service straight away.
The duration of the film.
Yeah, he wouldn't allow that. I just think 5 weeks is too limited. I mean, if you know something's only going to be in for 5 weeks, you're going to wait.
But that is minimum. In saying that, though, what's really sad, I do like those art house, those smaller films that, you know, Focus tend to make and stuff.
Yeah.
It's not going to apply to the art house films. It's just going to apply to the bigger films. So out this week is Reminders of Him, and it starts with that.
Yeah.
I wish that only had a 2 week run.
Yeah. Dying to see that.
See, I think this is a good thing for cinemas.
Yeah. No, it is. It can. And well, hopefully it's a sign of a little bit of a revitalization. Yeah. Now, Billie Eilish has acted before, has she?
Yeah. Although, Chris, have you seen her in the series that she's been in? So, apparently, and she's won a People's Choice Award for the TV performance and an Independent Spirit Award for a Prime Video series called Swarm. I've never seen it. It was a 10-episode series. But she has never acted in a film.
Yeah, okay.
So she's now Sarah Polley, who had an incredible, and it was a difficult watch, a film in 2023 called Women Talking. She's now going to adapt Sylvia Plath's The Bell Jar.
Oh, Jeannie Mack. I mean, what a film to start with, really. Yeah, light romantic comedy there.
Yeah, well, but this is like, remember last week we were talking about Lily Collins playing Audrey Hepburn?
Yeah.
And we're
like,
how did she get that? Well, because Audrey, it's her studio and she was really invested. Apparently this is a role that Billie Eilish has wanted to play for a long time. So they've been talking about it for a while. So look, nothing has been confirmed 100%, but it is out there and they're hoping that Billie Eilish will come on board and, I'm assuming, play the lead character.
Yeah. It's a pretty grim story.
Have you read it?
Yeah. But it's not a jolly kind of thing.
No.
It's probably a book you'd, well, I suppose a lot of women would read it, but, you know, when you're younger and you wear black all the time, it's one of those kind of books. And you want to have it in your jacket pocket so people can see you're reading it, you know.
I could see Billie Eilish being attracted to something like that. And, you know, if, let's say she gives an incredible performance and she gets nominated for an Oscar, it won't be her first Oscar if she goes on to win it, because she's already won two Oscars for music.
Yeah.
I think the difference between Lily Collins, though, landing a role in something where you're like, don't know about that, is that she's a working actor. Whereas Billie Eilish, I love Billie Eilish, I love her music. She's not an actor. And I don't think they should be getting parts. And I don't think non-actors should be getting parts in major films by respected filmmakers.
But she's done the TV series that none of us have watched and know nothing about.
Exactly.
But she's won a couple of awards.
Okay, I'll watch that. But
apparently, it's an American satirical dark comedy miniseries, created by Jenny Neighbors and Donald Glover.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, Donald Glover was one of the guys behind it. It's on Prime
Amazon.
Video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you don't call it Amazon anymore, do you?
No, it's Prime.
No. It's on the Trump liquor channel. That's what it's on. So, yeah, we'll see. Yeah, but you could see I could see your point, though, Chris, in the sense that, like, it'll attract, if she's still looking for investment in the project, connecting Billie Eilish's name to it will not do it any harm, kind of thing.
I don't think it will, exactly. So,
no, I like Sarah Polley's work as well. Yeah, deeply depressing, but very good.
Talking was incredible.
It was incredible.
Hard watch,
yeah. Yeah. Difficult watch. Please, if you're looking for something cheerful this weekend, don't go near
Reminders of Him is in cinemas right now. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be going for pints with Sarah Polley kind of thing, really. And The Traitor is going to be staying at, the English one, of course, is going to be staying at the Beeb until the end of the decade.
Yeah, till 2030, which is very exciting. I think the thing I'm most excited about is while The Traitors has been successful, and for them as well, it's not only been one of the most successful shows, But it's also been successful in the young people market as well, like between the ages of 16 to 35. Like, it's done really, really well. A lot of people watching it back on the player. But I think what took everyone by surprise was how successful Celebrity Traders was. So not only are we going to continue getting Traders, we're going to get, and this is what I'm most excited about, 2026, we are getting another Celebrity Traders.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy that one?
I didn't. I haven't watched a second of Traitors.
See?
Really. Sorry. Yeah.
Watched all of it. Excellent. Yeah.
I've only watched two. I've watched the Irish version, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And I watched UK Celebrity Traders, and Alan Carr was just brilliant. He made that whole series.
Yeah. It's hilarious. I think it's really interesting because there's a whole pile of stuff that has been done in terms of psychology experiments. And there's the Stanford Prison Experiment, where people were put into a role of
guards and prisoners.
Guards and prisoners, and they started acting it out. And sometimes you can see a little bit of that happening, that people start thinking, I'm a traitor. I have to act like a traitor. And you almost see this kind of internal conflict inside in them, where they're thinking, this isn't how I want to be, but this is what I have to do.
So you who's watched most of the series, because this is the thing I don't understand. I enjoyed the Irish one, I enjoyed the Celebrity one. I don't know if I could go back time and time again, but you have gone back time and time again, and it still is fresh.
There's changes and twists in it in terms of the way that they're doing it. And I think what's great about the UK and the Irish one is that with the Celebrity Traders, they're celebrities, and you know that going in. But with the Irish and the UK one, the people in it are quite real, even though they are people who've applied for a reality TV show. In America, I'm on a reality TV show and I'm going to show everybody that I'm amazing because I'm on a reality TV show, and it can be quite annoying. But there is a lot of getting to know the people on it, and it's a different cast of characters each time, and it's really interesting to see the different people. Yeah.
You've watched a lot of reality TV. Just from that sentence. That's impressive. Billie Eilish play in that series Swarm, she plays a character called Eva, a woman's empowerment cult leader.
Are these Swarm fans just coming out of the...
No, I just looked it up on Wikipedia there. How many texts have we had about Swarm? Oh, that would be none. Okay. Right, so a green beer, Dean. Let's brace ourselves.
The first beer that we're tasting is Floris Cactus. It is a fruit beer, and it is both a green beer and a white beer.
Okay.
So what you have with fruit beers, there has to be a base beer. So they brew something, and then they add a fruit or add something to the base beer. So the base beer for this beer is a wit beer, and wit is Flemish for white. Hmm. So the base beer is a white beer, and then they are using cactus pulp and lime to give it its green colour. So the flavours that you get from it, there's a distinct lime flavour, there's a kind of a blend of mint, vanilla, ginger, a little bit of spiciness in it. There's an impression of a margarita, so kind of an agave sweetness to it. And the lime and almost kind of tequila style alcohol flavor to it. Mm. But it's one of three ways that beer can become green, is to get a green fruit and add it to the beer and have a green fruit beer. It's the only green one that I know of. But there is another type of beer, and I was hunting around to see if this was possible, but what you need is a style of beer called Berliner Weiss. It's a sour style of beer that they do in Germany, and they do beer which is Weiss mit Schuh, and that is a Weiss beer with a shot. And what they add into it is Woodruff syrup. Woodruff is a type of herb. And the Woodruff syrup is green. And if you mix it in with the Berliner Weiss, then the drink becomes green. And it's comparable to a lager with lime. Because it's a green syrup, naturally green because it's got green from the thing. So that's the second way of doing it. And then the most technical way of doing it, which we have to thank an American in 1914, Professor H. Curtin, is you get a regular beer and you put food colouring in it.
Okay. Isn't that kind of what this is to a degree? Okay, they've used real fruit to do it.
They have brewed it, so the process at least has happened.
Yeah.
to introduce the green during the brewing process. It is a kind of a fruit syrup that's used. And I imagine that the green, because it is a distinctly, like it's the best I could describe it would be a lime green, but like kind of a squeezed lime juice or the actual, the colour of a lime. And it's quite difficult to get that intensity of green flavor when you're blending something in, because the original green will be mixed up with a white beer and gets diluted out. So I imagine that the syrup has maybe a couple of extra ingredients in it to make it more green.
And I imagine the original, the base wit beer tastes completely different to this.
It is, in some respects, base wit beer would have a kind of a citrusy coriander flavor. So coriander has a kind of a lemon lime type flavor to it, but it would be a subtle lemon lime flavor. This is full on.
Sweet,
it's like a kind of a full on margarita type cocktail.
Okay. I don't know. I just don't feel right about it. I just feel it's just all wrong. That's how I feel. Do you like it?
See, I don't like beer.
Yeah.
But this is one, it's not gluten free, unfortunately. This is one that I think I'd down. It just smells exquisite.
I think it tastes exactly how I expected the green Duff to taste in the Simpsons.
Okay, a series of glowing reviews there, right there. What movie would you like to talk about first, Chris?
We're going
to
do Danny Dyer's Hamlet.
Okay, Danny Dyer's Hamlet coming up after this.
Don't worry, boys. We've had some dark times. But Jimmy Banks is back. Are you there, kid?
Long time, y'all.
I've had a lot of dealings with Madrid. If you want to play there, Jerome, I'm your man.
Yeah, bro. Hola, Jimmy. Everything is okay with you?
Well, I don't take cocaine for breakfast anymore, so yeah, I suppose I'm cured.
That actually is a line from Hamlet, that last one there. That was one last deal with Danny Dyer. So he's a football manager.
Yeah, football agent, yeah.
Or football agent, yeah.
Was that about as much as you could play from that film without having to bleep out?
Yeah, that was the only bit. Yeah, yeah. In fact, that's comes from seven different scenes that we've stitched together.
Stitched them all together. It's Danny Dyer playing an old school, very sweary, mouthy, arrogant football agent named Jimmy Banks. And this is a film that contributes to, you know, the scrappy single room chamber piece. You know, it's all in one room. It's not in real time, unfortunately. That would actually probably make it better. It's all in one room. It's basically just got one actor. All the other actors just appear over the telephone. And it's Danny Dyer on the blower for an hour and a half, basically.
Okay.
And what's happening is that it's the hottest day of the year. It's in London, or the Dublin version of London, because this was all shot in a room in Dublin over 10 days. He's in London. He is trying to arrange a deal for his superstar client, a superstar client who is also a controversial client. He's been charged with assault. His verdict will be announced that day. And so on the day the verdict is going to be announced, the agent is trying to secure a payday that, you know, look, if he's found innocent, there'll be renewed interest in the striker's career, so he should be paid more for it. But he's trying to arrange it and get everyone to sign before the verdict is announced, because if it's, you know, if he's guilty, obviously, you know, Jimmy's career is gone, the striker's career is gone. So Jimmy is realizing, okay, look, if this does go south, and he's actually moved around a few pieces, he's not above, you know, bending the rules when it comes to the law, and he's hoping that this guy's going to be innocent. He has started to...
I'm sure real football agents aren't like
that at all. No, this guy's a wheeler dealer, and they definitely don't exist in football. But he has started to kind of panic and think, maybe I should have, you know, some sort of backup plan. So he gets in touch with his daughter, who he has a terrible relationship with. I mean, he's calling her on the day of her birthday, and he doesn't even know that it's her birthday. But she does have a relationship with this superstar striker on the up. So he wants her to put the footballer in touch with him so that he can secure a deal with this guy. He can represent this guy. And it's all going very well for him. He can't believe his luck. It looks like this guy's going to be made innocent or going to get an innocent verdict. And then all of a sudden, a blackmailer, who sounds a little bit like Darth Vader, and Danny Dyer tells him that, the blackmailer calls him and says, I have footage that will basically, you know, destroy you, destroy everybody you know, you know, your family, everything, unless you pay me something like 3 or 4 million quid. Mm. So he starts panicking. I should say, this is a guy who, as you heard in the clip, you know, he does sometimes start the day with some cocaine and whiskey. So he is high on adrenaline, he's loaded with booze, and he's basically trying to save not just this striker, but, you know, his entire career.
Yeah. Okay. And when the person rings up and says, you know, I have this dirt on you.
Yeah.
We know it's true. Do we know what the dirt is?
Can you say what the dirt? We do know what the dirt is. It is audio footage that basically puts himself and his striker in a compromising position. And it has to do with the case that's going on in court. But I mean, that's not even spoiling anything. You know from the outset that this guy has definitely done something bad and that the agent has maybe covered up a few things. So it's not about, and you know, one of the things I have with this film was like, Jimmy Banks is a very difficult geezer to root for. You just, you know, he's an awful human being. And the director, Brendan Muldowney, has been talking about that. This guy is bad news. But it's not about that. It's kind of, you know, he's going to burn and it's fun to watch him burn. And you know that at some point as well, he's going to realize, I've made all these terrible mistakes. Is there any room for redemption here? So that kind of makes him interesting that later on in the film, he kind of, you know, he doesn't suddenly develop a conscience, but all of a sudden, you know, he realizes, I might have made a few bad calls in my life. So this is, as I said, this was made in just 10 days. It's the Danny Dyer show. You've got other actors. You've got Natasha O'Keefe in there. You've got Katie Cavanaugh-Jupe, all acting over the telephone, playing everyone from football managers to lawyers to crooked cops. But it's just, it's all about Dyer. So it's quite edgy. It's quite economic. And you're thinking, you might be thinking to yourself, is he up to the challenge? I think he is. I think it gets to a point in this film where it's like, I can't imagine anyone else doing this. It does feel like it's, you know, a reel for, you know, whenever Danny Dyer is going to be cast in any future thrillers, it's like, what can Danny Dyer do? Well, wait a second. He was brilliant in this thing. And he is quite good in this thing. I think he holds it all together. Like even when the plot was actually written by a guy named, or the script was written by a guy named Peter Howlett, who is a full-time accountant, banker, and a part-time screenwriter. I think this is like actually one of the first things that he's written. And it was a case, I was talking to the director recently, and it was a case that he wrote this script and gave it to a filmmaker friend, and then that filmmaker friend gave it to another, and it just went all the way down the line to Brendan Muldowney, who is a filmmaker. He gave us Pilgrimage and The Cellar, and he said, I can do this, and I can shoot it cheaply, and I can shoot it very, very quickly in just 10 days. And the first person they thought was Danny Dyer. So even when the plot kind of verges on the distasteful, and even when it kind of goes to some, you know, uncomfortable places, I think Dyer just elevates the whole thing, which is not something I've said a lot about him, but between this, Mr. Big Stuff, and Rivals, I am totally behind this new, you know, Danny Dyer resurgence, this mid-career revival. And also, he doesn't just contribute to great single-room thrillers, he also contributes to films where the leading man gets to have a very memorable dance. He's a very good dancer.
Okay.
Especially when he's full of whiskey.
Okay. All right. And we see dancing in this movie.
We see him dancing in this movie, yeah.
Okay.
We do.
Does it feel like a play, though, if it's only in one room?
Yeah, I mean, there is that, like, there were times where I was thinking, so I was just talking to Dean about this, that everyone forgets that, you know, Dyer, though, he did slip into this mode where he was saying yes to everything. He was fronting too many kind of, you know, football hooligan docs. He was just playing himself. He made one of the worst films of all time before his career was saved by EastEnders. But we forget that he was, you know, He didn't train at acting school, but he came up under Harold Pinter. Harold Pinter took a shine to him, and he started his career he was on the stage for quite a long time, and he was very, very good back then. Kind of almost destroyed it with, you know, extracurricular activities, but he was very, very good. And I was thinking, I hope this film does well for him. And you know, people will go see it, I think. But if you were to take this and put it on a stage, even off West End, he'd have a hit. People would absolutely come out to see Danny Dyer play football agent for an hour and a half on stage. I would go see it.
Yeah. But from a directorial point of view, is that a challenge? Because you've got one set.
That is, yeah. But I think Brendan Muldowney, I think he does rise to it. There's not an awful lot that you can do within that confined space. But that's what kind of makes it interesting. Maybe that's why, you know, you have little things like Dyer getting up and running around the room and dancing and playing pool by himself. It's not just Dyer sitting at his desk.
Yeah.
You know,
the
more whiskey he drinks, like, the more erratic he becomes and the more playful he becomes. So yeah, I think they do the best with the resources that they have.
Yeah.
And it is, I was never bored.
Yeah.
Never bored.
But the only face you see is Danny Dyer.
The only face you see is Danny Dyer.
That's you've got to admire that.
Yeah.
The cojones of doing that.
Absolutely.
Okay. Right. That's one last deal. Now there's going to be a new Lord of the Rings series. I forget which one it's called, but Kate Winslet's going to be in it.
Yeah, I'm not excited about this, but I'm excited about Kate Winslet. This might be, finally, I might actually watch Lord of the Rings because I want to go see Kate Winslet.
You've never watched Lord of the Rings?
So I watched the very first one with my mate and we watched it at home, and after 2.5 hours, it just ended with them walking in a field and I just went, that's it. You're not going to give us any more. And then I got really upset and I just couldn't watch it again.
You haven't watched the sequels?
I felt cheated. No,
but you didn't
cheated.
Want to know when they got out of the field where they ended up.
I was like, do you know what? I've wasted time.
Were they going to milk cows? Was it? Who knows?
We made up our own. So I haven't gone back, but I might go watch this one. This one is called The Hunt for Gollum. Breaking Baz, I think. But anyway, this is based.
It's a mixed message
Actually, no. The Hunt for Gollum. And it comes between The Hobbit and The Fellowship of the Ring. And if you're a fan of The Hobbit, of Lord of the Rings, I'm really sorry. But it's developed from Tolkien's footnotes. So this is where this story is coming from. We don't know what role she's playing, but apparently Andy Serkis and Peter Jackson spent most of last year trying to convince her to appear in the film. So because the thing is, it's not that I don't think she doesn't want to be in the film, but when you appear in a film like this, it's not only relocating, you're relocating to the other side of the world. So she's going to New Zealand.
Oh, it has to be in New Zealand.
It's not even for a month. You're expected to be there from May to October. So it's a long time to go. We don't know, as I said, what she's playing, but we do know that in this film, Elijah Wood is returning as Frodo and Ian McKellen is going to be Gandalf, and we'll have Andy Serkis back as Gollum.
Right, okay. The Breaking Baz aspect is Gollum got a meth lab? That's a plot. I'd watch that.
let's forget that. Yes.
Okay, that was just a typo there. All right. Okay, we'll just rub that.
That was a Ron Burgundy moment.
Still, that would be Kate wins it though. I mean, like that is. She's a piece of class, you know.
Kate Blanchett was in these, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was.
Yeah.
Said she never got paid for it as well.
What?
Said she never made any money out of Lord of the Rings.
How is that possible?
I don't know how. I mean, you think after you filmed and then a few months later you'd be like, where's the check?
Yeah.
What is going on here? Yeah. But she claims she never got paid for it.
And you'd think they try to make right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's money.
Because
oh,
I'm sure it's
made.
Still making money.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, it is. Just not for Kate Blanchett.
Junie Mac.
Yeah.
Right, and there's going to be surprise, surprise. This barely exciting. Constitutes news. There's going to be a sequel to K-pop Demon Hunters.
Yes.
Have they given any details about what complex plot lines they're going to weave for this one?
Well, one of the directors has said, Maggie Kang has said, there's so much more to this world we have built, and I'm excited to show you. This is only the beginning. We don't know as yet when it's coming, because the problem with this was it was such a success. It was a surprise hit last year, so much so that I think Sony Pictures were going, why didn't we put it in at the cinemas? Because when they put it in after the fact, people flocked to the cinemas to watch it. So could you imagine what would have happened if it didn't go straight to Netflix? The problem is a film like this takes a few years to do. So they were saying possibly 2029, but possibly not. It could take a little bit longer than this.
Oh, wow.
They haven't really started working on it properly because who would have thought the K-pop Demon Hunters, there'd be Oscar buzz around it. But it's looking like this weekend it could walk away with two Oscars. It could walk away with Best Animation and Best Original Song.
Yeah.
For Golden.
Yeah.
So,
but it's the songs really that kind of seem to have driven it.
Yeah, the songs are fantastic. Like even I sometimes will put the soundtrack on and I'm just like, I'm in a really happy mood and buzzing around. So, and look, this film as well appealed to everyone. I had my 10-year-old son and my 14-year-old daughter both enjoying this film. So
okay, all right, because you'd wonder about it because it seemed to be one of those things that that adults hadn't heard of it, and then suddenly everyone under a certain age knew all the words to all the songs. And so if they wait too long, that audience are all going to be driving cars.
That might be the concern.
Yeah,
exactly. But even if they're not driving cars, attention spans are so short. We're just like, oh no, we've already moved on from that. So I think they've got to hurry up. But nothing's going to happen anyway until after Sunday, because rightly so, they're enjoying the awards buzz that's happening around them right now. They never expected when they put this out that they would have to be picking out a gown for the Oscars, let alone possibly writing a speech.
Yeah, ka-ching though, all the money they made out of it. And there's going to be a John Bon Jovi. Is it about John Bon Jovi, this biopic, or about the whole band?
Okay, so we don't know much. We're thinking it's going to be about the band. I'm very excited about this. So Universal has just won the bidding war about the band. They don't have, so this is news, but it's not too much news because it doesn't have a director. We don't know whether this is going to be like Elton John, where it was about his whole life, or whether it's going to be like Bruce Springsteen's biopic, where it was about a certain period of time in the band's history. So I, for one, think I'll be there regardless, just for the music alone.
Yeah.
So that's hopefully coming.
But they
soon.
Must have bought something. There must be some story they're basing this on.
Well, yes, but they're not telling us much.
Okay. So,
but look, we don't know. What has happened is that Universal has won the bidding rights, so they get the right to tell that story. But what story they are going to tell, we don't know as yet.
Okay.
But we know that there is going to be a film, which is very exciting if you're a Bon Jovi fan.
Well, does anyone know, was there any particularly traumatic, dramatic period in the life of Bon Jovi?
No.
Well, they had that documentary recently.
Which
is really good.
Well, I believe someone somewhere right now is still trying to finish that documentary. It went on for about 5 or 6 hours.
Oh, I loved it.
There was no need for it. But there was that period, I think the first era of the documentary, that period where they were a band. Like they play gigs like when they were still in school.
Yeah.
And then they'd get home from the gigs at like 3 o'clock in the morning and then go to school. And they were playing with Springsteen the night before. All that stuff you could potentially do really well in film.
Yeah.
You could kind of cover the years where no one took them seriously. You know, the way it wasn't until they actually brought in outside songwriters that they kind of took off.
But
that would work really well in film.
What about the time that Richie Sambora left the band?
Yeah.
That might be a time to...
Why did he leave?
Did he just leave because he was done, or did he leave?
I have no idea.
Yeah, well, yeah. Sam Richie left the band anyway, and there's been a couple of others who
to share a hairdryer, probably.
Possibly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Would you watch?
Well, for that band particularly, that would be an issue, I imagine. So we'll see what the story actually, because I must have when I started watching the Springsteen movie, I thought, what's this about?
Mm.
But then it actually was about something. Yeah. I must say,
it's good.
No, it was good, but at the start I thought this is very low jeopardy.
Yeah,
you know, you're making, you're a millionaire, rock star, and you're making an album that mightn't be that popular.
Do you know what the Springsteen movie did really well, as opposed to the
Bob Dylan,
the Bob Dylan one? Yeah.
I was really disappointed with the Bob Dylan one because I didn't know it was about a period of his life. Whereas when you went into Springsteen, I think they need to be with their marketing. They need to be more direct. They need to, when they call it a biopic, you expect to see everything. Whereas with Springsteen, you went in knowing this is a certain period of his life. Whereas with Bob Dylan, I just assumed it was going to be all of his life. So I was really disappointed when it was just a certain period of his life.
Well, but any fan of Dylan would know the Dylan Goes Electric thing was, you know, the most probably very traumatic for him.
And, yeah.
You know, afterwards he didn't gig for 7 or 8 years or something.
I would have liked to have known about that other stuff as well.
Yeah. Though, watching that Dylan film, like he could smell the cigarettes off people's clothes, which I thought was really like atmospheric. Mm.
Yeah.
It's just Chamolet as Dylan. No.
Oh, you didn't buy him?
No, not for a second. Now, the thing is, who knows Dylan? I can't kind of go, my good friend Bob Dylan is not like that, because nobody has a clue what he's like, really. He's a kind of a cipher. It's just everyone else I completely bought apart from him.
Yeah, he's a character as well, which means that you don't really know what he's like.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's all imagination, but I liked him. I liked him as
well. It's just something I find slappable about him.
Is it about Chalamet in particular?
About Chalamet,
okay,
yeah. It's just a thing. Anyway, you are listening to the Moncrief Show and Newstalk. Before I'm sued by Timothy Chalamet, we'll take a break back in a minute. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on Newstalk. 087-1400-106 is our WhatsApp number. Chris Wasser, Serena Bellissimo and Dean McGuinness are still with us. And thankfully, Dean has finally put a real beer in front of us. This is what?
Genuinely good. Well, if we're going to do something that's green, white and gold for St. Patrick's Day weekend, we have to have an Irish beer. And this is an Irish beer connected to an Irish pub. So how St. Patrick's Day weekend could it possibly be?
Mm.
What you have is Third Barrel Brewing, which is a Dublin-based brewery, has done a collaboration with the Brickyard out in Dundrum. And they do beers under Two Sides Brewing Company. And this is a Helles Lager. So I was looking for something golden. It's an awful lot easier to find something golden than to find something green.
So, yeah.
So apologies to all of the other wonderful Irish beers that are golden that weren't selected. And just to say to people, you know, it's Patrick's weekend. Have a look. Look out some Irish craft beers and pick out an Irish craft beer you haven't tried before. There's loads of really wonderful ones out there.
Mm.
This one, what I liked about it in a couple of ways, obviously it rounds out the theme with green, white and gold because it's a golden colour. It's a Helles Lager, which is German style, but they've done a bit of a twist on the Helles Lager. If it were a German Helles Lager, it would have to be brewed according to the Reinheitsgebot, which would be just 4 ingredients or 3, 4 or 5 ingredients, depending on what period of history that you look at. 3 ingredients when they didn't know the yeast exists, 4 ingredients when it was malted barley, hops, water and yeast. And then if you were rich, it was 5 ingredients because wheat was allowed for the aristocracy. democracy. So
typical.
Yeah. So what they've done with this is they have changed their grain bill. So they have got malted barley, but also oats and wheat as well in it. So the oats give a slightly creamier texture to it. The wheat gives it a kind of a crisp texture. So a little bit sweeter than a kind of a normal lager, just in terms of balance. It's not a sweet beer, but just in terms of balance, it's got a little bit more sweetness, and that comes through as honey, honeycomb, crunchy type.
It's lovely. Yeah.
And then there's a nice kind of noble hop, nettles, herbal, sweet tobacco type balancing character. But they've done a really good job on it. Lovely beer. Well worth looking.
Yeah, fantastic. And there's going to be, now it's not a new, is this, was there a George Michael concert film and now they've just kind of remastered it, so to speak, or
yeah, what's the situation? But we've never seen it. So
okay.
It's the Faith tour based on the 1987 album Faith. And what I'm really, so this is, they're planning to have this in cinemas. We don't know when yet. But what I love as well as this, they're going to screen a short film before the actual concert performance. And this is from Mary McCartney, who has some unheard interview audio from Michael and George Michael. And there's also some unseen photographs by fashion photographer Herb Ritz. So I think I'm just as excited to see that as I am to see George Michael up on stage doing that album, like one of the best albums, I'd say, of the 80s and early 90s. And I never got to see him in concert. Did you get to see George Michael?
Never seen him.
Oh,
no.
Did you?
No.
What was he like in concert?
Fabulous, yeah.
Where did you see him?
I saw him in the Old Point Theatre when he was back touring again, I think maybe for the first time in like 10, 15 years or something. And then the second time he had an orchestra with him, which wasn't, it was very good, but not the same as George Michael in full on pop star mode.
Yeah. This was a 14 camera shoot.
Yeah. So.
And why wasn't it released before?
Good question.
Yeah. You know the way you always say it's lost footage, like, or it's a lost album. How sloppy are people in the entertainment industry?
But it's interesting because all the lost stuff is around the 80s and 90s when I think they did just like the money was there, so you would just spend the money. Yeah.
Oh, no, absolutely. But I think lost means somebody threatened to sue somebody more than anything. It was a dispute about money and it didn't come
possibly.
Out.
Possibly.
It's not like
it was lost.
Is that the shirt there?
Is that George Michael? You'll never guess.
I'm going to go do a spring clean when I get home.
Anyway, I'll move on to our second movie. It's How to Make a Killing. Here's a clip.
Since the day I was born, my mother told me we were different. Yes, she had been disowned by her family, but someday I would become the sole heir. I just had to wait for all of them to die. There were seven of them. Seven rich pricks between myself and $28 billion.
Well, call me when you've killed them all.
There you go. That's How to Make a Killing. Glenn Powell.
How to Make Glenn Powell a Movie Star.
During that clip, we were all going, huh.
I didn't like Glenn Powell. Everyone, he gets talked a lot about in the same breath as Tom Cruise. And I think, you know, he has been billed as, you know, is this the next Tom Cruise?
But only in the sentence of he's no Tom Cruise, I would imagine.
I think it's the fact that Tom Cruise, for a while, was championing him. He actually he made sure that Glenn Powell got cast in Top Gun Maverick and sat down with him and said, yes, it's a small part, but you don't turn down a small part. You make that small part great. You make that stand out. And that was really the turnaround of his film career. But at that point that Glenn Powell was at, certainly, just in terms of his age, Tom Cruise was starting to make films where the quality of the filmmaking matched the confidence, and it matched the, you know, like the two of them just came together and Tom Cruise is just untouchable and magic. We haven't seen that with Glenn Powell because he is, you know, maybe saying yes to an awful lot of things so that we keep seeing them, but the quality is just not there. I always come away from Glenn. I don't think I've ever really hated a Glenn Powell film, but I always come away from one thinking, imagine what that guy could do with a real hit. And we just haven't seen it yet. That being said, I did find this quite watchable. It is a sort of, not a remake, but sort of a remix, I suppose, of the 1949 black comedy, Kind Hearts and Coronets. In that film, you had Alec Guinness playing the seven or eight people who are off while this guy tries to, you know, claim back his inheritance. Fortunately, we don't really have that gimmick, or we don't have that gimmick at all here. That would just be very, very strange now. But the story is quite similar. I mentioned earlier that it started off as a sort of a direct remake, but it kind of went its own way. But you have Glenn Powell playing a guy named Beckett Redfellow, and at the beginning of the film he's confessing his crimes to a priest on death row. We know that Glenn Powell is going down. He's going to be executed in 4 hours, I think it is. And he is confessing his crimes, but he insists that the crime that he's going to be executed for wasn't actually his murder. But the other murders, he says, well, you know, I did do those and I'm going to tell my story. And his story starts with a teenage pregnancy. It starts with his mum, who is a member of a very, very wealthy family. At 18, she falls pregnant and her dad, played by Ed Harris, says, well, you either get rid of the baby or you, you know, you raise it by yourself. So she wants to keep the baby and so he kicks her out of the family. Doesn't kick them out of the inheritance, though, and that bit's important. So while Glenn Powell's character, you know, Beckett, he's growing up with this mom. The mom actually dies very young and he kind of is in and out of foster homes. As an adult, Glenn Powell's character is in a position where he's selling suits. He has a decent job. He's doing all right for himself. But I think he has this thing, you know, his mom always told him, you deserve a better life. You don't stop until you get the life you deserve. He has this thing where I should be a billionaire, so I'm going to go chase that. And he basically, the film asks us to believe that after one very bad day where he runs into someone from his past, played by Margot Qualley, sort of an unrequited love, he decides, you know what, screw this, I'm finished selling suits, I'm finished not being, you know, I'm done with not being respected. I am going to go out and kill all of my cousins and all of the other red fellows and the people in line to claim the family inheritance. As you do.
So who hasn't been there?
Exactly. So he starts doing that. So he gets rid of one cousin who is a total finance bro and maybe has it coming. And after he does that, he lands his job. So he lands a very successful job. He gets rid of another cousin and he wins himself a girlfriend, played by the brilliant Jessica Henwick. And on it goes until eventually the FBI start going, hold on, there's a lot of red fellows dying here. Let's interview Glenn Powell. He looks suspicious.
Is there any role Glenn Powell has had where he showed the potential that you think he has?
Hitman was the closest with Richard Linklater, which he was also involved in co-writing. I thought that was quite clever. I might have been clouded by the fact that I think just Richard Linklater is great. Anything he does is always worth a watch. Yeah. But I do come away from them. Glenn Powell has this weird unofficial franchise going for himself at the minute where he's playing people, where he fools people into thinking he's someone he isn't. So you had the Hitman, you had the Running
what
Man.
What he's doing in real life.
Exactly.
He's conning people into thinking he's an actor. That's all we have time for. Thanks to Chris, Serena and Dean.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
The martini, shaken not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.